Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Ho, 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 and welcome to a special episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. My name is Tyler Fornes, and with me today is my co-host, Fred Moreland, who is going to give me 24 presents today as we do kind of a little bit of a different episode. Fred, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? Honestly, the presents are for myself. I bought myself a box of AEW trading cards from Upper Deck, the new set, and I was going to open them as we did the show. So I guess I'll go ahead and get it started. You know, I got a pack right here.
Let's have some fun. I'm very excited to see these as we are doing a video chat. So I can,
yes, this I is a as we all know, podcasting is a visual medium. So you know, and you know, you got the cards. The gimmick with them is, you know, they have a bunch of parallels. You know, this is a Anna Jay. You can't tell because they're kind of glossy and reflective. But let's see, this pack's got Anna Jay, Vicky Guerrero, Eddie Kingston as a base card, so that's always nice. Jay Lethal and Frankie Kazarian, so a rather mid-card as hell pack. But we also have, there's gold parallels, one in each pack of Vicky Guerrero, and then there's a special canvas insert with it's a different kind of print with Cash Wheeler. And finally, an insert of debut dates with Christian Cage on it. But oddly, there's one more thing in here, which is a piece of paper, and it's got something written on it. I've never seen this before. It's not like an autograph. It says, "Help, stuck in Upper Deck Factory." Oh, wait, over in the corner. That's weird. Okay, I'm turning it over. "Hoping to hear my favorite podcast, The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy, answer these 24 questions I wrote and put in each pack for this box." They really could have balanced this more on the two sides, Tyler. It's weird. Like, they just wrote the one sentence on the front. It keeps going, "I especially hope to hear them answered by my favorite host, Tyler Fortas." That's stiff. "Thank you." That's weird, Tyler. I've literally never had this happen before in my life. I can't believe this.
They're doing weird things with trading cards these days.
It's wild. The whole industry is just nuts these days. Question number one in this pack is Sasha Banks coming to AEW? And I just so happen to have some notes from Dave Meltzer. If you'd like me to go through those first,
let's do that.
Meltzer's update on Banks, and of course, Joe Lanza had a report on her earlier in the week, and this is kind of piggybacking off of that. But basically, she and WWE agreed to a deal where she would be released from her WWE contract at the end of this calendar year. And despite the fact I keep thinking it's like August, it is actually December 19th as we record this. So that's almost done. And it kind of assages my, is she actually leaving, you know, theory from last week. So no, she actually is gone. And he had these quotes. "Obviously, New Japan couldn't pay anywhere close to a WWE deal, as many of the women in the company earn in excess of $1 million per year, and the big stars are well above that figure. She was said to be seeking a number along the levels of Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair, and those internally have said she wasn't offered numbers close to that. They said that she's not seen internally as someone who would be on top for the next 5 years, but is seen as someone who could get a singles or tag team title run, but has peaked as a star, aside from the reality that was acknowledged that if she would return, there would be a honeymoon period where people would go nuts for her. Plus, she had a rep in WWE of being really talented inside the ring, but there were issues behind the scenes that were talked about as problems, and she did walk out of the promotion twice. So, as a reminder, Sasha Banks is 30. Will be turning 31 next month. Well, do you think she's coming in, and what do you think about those quotes from WWE kind of burying her on her way out, if you will?
I mean, what does WWE have to lose? Why would they praise her if they know she's never coming back? This isn't the era of Vince McMahon anymore. We don't know how Paul Levesque is going to handle these situations. Vince had a history of anytime someone left a promotion, no matter how bad it was, he always found a way to make amends if it meant making money. You look at Hulk Hogan. You look at Bruno Sammartino. You look at Bret Hart. There are many instances of this throughout the history of WWE.
Where Ultimate Warrior, which I literally thought would never happen. The only one that never happened is Macho Man because he died. I honestly think that if he had not died of that terrible heart attack / car wreck, it probably would have happened with him too.
You know what? It probably would have, but I think that one might be a little bit of a different scenario too, Fred, just considering that a lot of the rumors surrounding him and a 17-year-old Stephanie McMahon, that might have been a bridge too far for Vince. But unfortunately, we'll never know because, as you said, Macho Man tragically did pass away way, way, way too young. I think with Paul, we genuinely don't know how he's going to handle these. We did see him bring back a bunch of people that Vince let go, but we've never had a situation where there's bad blood between a wrestler and WWE, and Paul has brought that person back. Now, that's not to say he won't. We have no precedent for how Paul's going to handle these things. And because we have no precedent, I'm going to go under the assumption, because they're burying her on the way out, that she is not coming back to WWE. I do think it would be a somewhat of a mistake, considering the relationship that Tony Khan has with pretty much everybody else in the wrestling business, that her not going to AEW would be a mistake. Because I think, one, she would be a humongous ratings draw. And I said this last week, I think she'd be a ratings draw on the lines of CM Punk. It's obviously a different situation, but she is like one of three ratings movers in WWE, where her segments skyrocket. People love Sasha Banks, and I think they're going to follow her in droves. We've already seen some of the stans come out on Twitter and like say that, you know, how much they love her. We've had some like going RIP to her WWE career. Wherever she appears, I really think that they're going to follow because they love Sasha Banks. Some are just going to love WWE and they're going to find another diva to latch on to. Sorry, they're not divas anymore.
That's right.
Women's wrestler. Right. They're going to find someone else to latch on to. They
women's superstar even.
Superstar.
If we're using the proper WWE speak, I guess.
I'm not using their damn vernacular. They can shove it. But
you really shouldn't.
Anyways, you look at that. How can she not want to go to AEW, considering they're on national television? She can be a draw. They would use her as a draw. I'm almost certain that they would. And I don't think she even needs to sign a full-time contract. She can just do like part-time because they like cycling people in and out. Have her come in for like a 6-week cycle every pay-per-view. Get her on television. And then you know what? Maybe you give her a run with one of the titles. If she comes into AEW right after January 1st, on either the 4th or the 11th, when there's that mystery tag team partner with Saraya, she comes in and she runs roughshod through the division, and then she wins the TBS title from Jade at Revolution. One, I think that could be a storyline that works because of how much of a star she is and how great she is in the ring. Jade would not lose anything by losing to her, and I think we both agree she needs to drop that title and then go work on things. Yeah. I really think it would be a mistake for her not to come because I think there's a lot that she can do, and there's a history of AEW caring about professional wrestling, caring about the business, and caring about the people that work for them. And CM Punk even pointed to it. The Brody Lee tribute show sold him officially on coming back. And I think that kind of stuff makes a massive difference to somebody who is coming into your company. So you look at all of those aspects, Fred. If she doesn't come, that's going to be a personal decision for her. It could be a financial one because we heard about that with Stardom and Bushiroad. They're paying her only on a per-day basis because they would not pay her on a full-time contract for what she was asking. Quite frankly, I don't blame them for not saying yes, and I don't blame her for saying no, because in Japan, I don't know what kind of a mover she will be. In the U.S., she will draw, and she will bring in crowds. That I don't think is a question at all.
No, but I think the reporting is that they anticipate her using her primarily in U.S. based events, like alongside the New Japan America events. Not like strong tapings, but like when they come over and tour, having her possibly be, you know, take the IWGP Women's Championship. I believe that's what the reporting is on an anticipated direction for her with Stardom.
Mm-hmm. I really think it would just be a mistake for her not to show up. And I think because she wants to wrestle, she is a dork like us. And I mean that in an endearing, positive way. She's one of us. She's going to want to do that. She's going to want to have those matches, like the St. Patrick Day slam match with the hardcore match with Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa. I gave that 4 3/4. I think she's going to see that kind of stuff and want in. She's going to want to do that kind of stuff, want to be creative and not just have a War Games match because it's called War Games. She's going to want to help that division. She's going to want to build it up, and she can be a pillar for that women's division over the next decade in AEW. I find it really hard that she's going to want to say no to that unless there is something that we don't know, Fred. Behind the scenes, there could be bad blood between her and Tony Khan. There could be bad blood between her and somebody else on the roster. There could be somebody, I just don't want to work in a place that they work. We don't know a lot of those things, and I think that'll come out the second that she makes any form of decision outside of Stardom and then New Japan as well. I think she will be with AEW on 111, and I think the second the new year hits, they will promote her and they will get people to watch their television, and I think she's going to spike ratings.
Yeah, I think she can really be a difference maker for him, and I do hope she comes in, that AEW is willing to pay her the money that she's really worth. Every wrestler in WWE and probably AEW too is underpaid. Just looking at like a share of the revenue compared with the major sports leagues. But, you know, I'm hopeful that AEW will be able to get her in and maybe do some stuff with her. So
it would be great for both parties for her to join AEW, because that women's division, while there are some talented females in it, we're still pushing the likes of Nyla Rose, who is just not going to get any better than what she is now. She's a great base. She's a great monster per se, in the same way that like you had your Canes and Big Shows. They were monsters for somebody to overcome before they get to the mountaintop. That's where I think Nyla Rose is. And she's still getting title matches. I think that they need to get more blood in the building. And I think that Sasha would be the perfect way. You could build Rampage around Sasha Banks and you'd be able to spike those ratings in a similar vein to what they did with CM Punk. I really think she can be that kind of a draw.
I completely agree. Are you ready for the next pack and mystery question?
Yeah, I'm excited.
All right. Our next pack has base cards of Bryce Remsburg. Now, if that make you break the bank, I don't know what will. Riho has a gold parallel of Sean Spears, and then a main features insert of Rey Fénix. And then it's missing several cards from this pack because it actually is the one with the memorabilia card for Sting. Looks like it's a piece of Matt. So that's pretty cool. And the question is, does MJF's Patty Pimblett feud do anything for MJF or AEW?
See, that's interesting. Let's talk about this from a few
different angles. Yeah, I think so. The person that wrote these questions must be very intelligent.
I don't think so. I mean, let's be honest. We're talking about Patty Pimblett here. Anyways, I don't know, because while there is a lot of crossover between MMA and wrestling fans, I mean, just look at our office Slack when UFC pay-per-views happen. There's a lot of discourse about it, and you and I a lot of times are in that discourse because we enjoy the promotion, and it can be extremely fun. But while they are incredibly similar, they are very, very different. And a lot of people who watch real fighting do not like professional wrestling because it's not, quote unquote, real. What they do is real, but it is essentially an athletic version of a play. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think one of the reasons that we like it is because when it's really good, it's really good, and you suspend your disbelief. Some people who like real fighting do not have that same correlation. I think you're going to be able to get some promotion from MJF and Patty Pimblett, but what's the end game here? Are we going to bring Patty onto AEW Dynamite What kind of fee is he going to be? And how much of a draw is he actually going to be? Because within the MMA world, he's all right. He's not Conor McGregor. Like, he's not Paige Van Zandt. When Paige came into the promotion with Dan Lambert, you had ties. You had star power. And obviously, Paige is a very attractive woman. That makes a difference. What is Patty bringing to the table that will generate any kind of sustainable mainstream buzz? Because I think at the end game, if you want to have a feud with somebody in the UFC and you want to do some cross promotional stuff, having cachet in mainstream media means everything. Paige Van Zandt had some cachet. Conor McGregor has the most cachet. Now, Masvidal, that makes a lot more sense to me. Patty, it's cool for social media, but I don't think it really does anything for AEW, because I don't think him coming in would be any kind of a big ratings mover or draw. And Patty's not going to want to come in here and lose to MJF, and MJF certainly isn't going to lose. Like, he is the biggest star arguably in professional wrestling right now. You have to do something to protect him. And I don't see a winning end game for AEW in this scenario.
Well, the biggest issue with Pimblett is that he nearly lost that fight. Like, he probably should have, except that the judging was kind of weird from what I heard against Jordan. What is his last name, if I recall correctly? So I think that what I read, because I'm not following MMA much these days, but what I read is that Pimblett was kind of getting pushed along the same Conor McGregor trash-talking lines, but just didn't deliver in the ring this time. Or the cage, I guess I should say.
Yeah, it's I don't see it. Now, if you want to start a feud with Masvidal or McGregor, hell yeah. But right now, it doesn't make sense. And I think it's going to be fun on social media, and that's it.
Fair enough. Oh, let's see what's in our next pack. We've got a base card of Dante Martin, Ricky Starks, Penta El Zero Miedo, Colt Cabana, and then the Lucha Brothers as a tag team. And our inserts is a gold parallel of Anna Jay, a main features card of Dustin Rhodes, and a UD Canvas Dax Harwood card. So I've completed the FTR pairing there of that insert set. And the question is, what is your AEW MVP ballot for the year? Give your top five in order.
John Moxley is 1 through 5. It's John Moxley. You could make an argument, I guess, for MJF, but I don't think it would be too strong of one, considering over the summer, John Moxley held that interim title. And with CM Punk out, he was really the catalyst of the show. He was a catalyst of the company. Then he dropped it to CM Punk at All Out. And then he had to take the ball again because CM Punk had the brawl out thing and he had to be stripped of the title. I don't think it matters 2 through 5 because it's John Moxley. And anybody else is just cannon fodder at this point. It's Moxley. He kept the company doing well when circumstances were far from ideal.
But if you were to round out your top five, just to go along with the gimmick.
All right, well, I'll go along with the gimmick.
They're trapped in a factory, man. You got to be nice to them.
All right, so John Moxley obviously is number one. Chris Jericho, I'd probably put at number two. He has been a constant on television, and he's been really good no matter what position he's been put in. And obviously, you had the tremendous feud with him in the Blackpool Combat Club. Three, this is where it gets kind of hard. I think you can make an argument for Britt Baker. She's been a constant. She's been very good whenever she's been put in positions. Obviously, the Saraya match. Now, we can have conversations about that match in general, but she did everything she could to deliver the promos, all of that. I think you have to consider FTR. They, no matter which rendition of them, if it was the two of them or if it was just Dax Harwood on his vanity tour to get Wrestler of the Year votes, they were constant on television for the most part. We obviously had them complain about it at Royal Quest, that telling Tony Khan to book them. But when they were on TV, they were great. They get one of the biggest pops in the building every single time they go out, and they've been excellent. Five, this is where it gets tough. What about, here's kind of an oddball one. I think I'd put it as a tie between like Daniel Garcia and Bryan Danielson.
Okay.
They've been just tremendous segments. Garcia hasn't been focused on nearly enough. And I wonder if he's going to be an ROH mainstay and he's just on the AEW roster because they needed to get him under contract. And then Danielson, whenever he goes out, it's gold.
Yeah.
Just the consistency from those two, I think, puts them up really high. There's probably someone I'm missing. But in all honesty, none of it matters because it's Jon Moxley. And that's, to me, end of discussion.
Yeah, I think it'd be have to be unanimous for him this year. For my top five, I'd probably go Moxley, Jericho, like you did. I think I'd put FTR third. And then after that, it is a little difficult. I think I would put Bryan Danielson fourth, and then the Acclaimed fifth. I think they've just had
a good call on the Acclaimed. Good call.
I think they've had a really strong year. I don't know that I really see anyone on the women's side having a strong enough year because Britt did disappear for a while, and of course Thunder Rosa, blah blah blah. So that's probably my take off the cuff. Next pack, let's see who's in here. We got Arn Anderson, Wardlow, and Helico. Thunder Rosa, Daniel Garcia, previously mentioned. And then a Darby Allin insert, a Jungle Boy insert, and a Paul White, Tall Paul parallel. How about them Vikings?
Oh, God. Oh, God. Let me tell you about them Vikings. As a lot of you probably already know, I almost died now. It'll be 4 years in February. I was literal hours from my deathbed, and the fact that I didn't go into septic shock is kind of a miracle. I almost died on Saturday. Watching that game took years off my life. The first half, so I am the managing editor for the Vikings Wire, so I write constantly about the Vikings on game day. And throughout the first half, I was writing a burial piece. I probably had 800 words written about how the Vikings stunk, and I placed a percentage blame to who I thought was to blame for that first half. Well, then the Vikings came back in from a 33-0 deficit and won 39-36 in overtime. That was one of the more remarkable comebacks I've ever seen.
Biggest comeback in NFL history.
And you know what? Those who know me, and I think you know this too, Warren Moon is my favorite football player ever. I have watched that 32-point comeback by the Buffalo Bills over the Houston Oilers no less than a dozen times. It's one of my favorite football games to watch because it's so fascinating on so many levels. And it's one of the reasons why the run and shoot ended up dying in the National Football League. Because when you have a big lead, it's really hard to sustain it with how your offense is built. Now, I've seen that game multiple times, and the dichotomy of the two are completely different. But the Vikings ended up finding a way to come back and tie the game and end up winning in overtime. That was an emotional roller coaster. And I don't get emotional about football much anymore because it has become my job. And I try to really be even keeled and give as objective analysis as I can. But let me tell you, my puppy Odie, who is sleeping right next to me as I record the show, was scared because on that last touchdown, I was jumping up and screaming and pumping my fist. And I was so excited that the Vikings had figured out a way to come back from an insurmountable deficit and win a football game. And you know what? They're not going to give the Vikings any credit for that comeback. They're going to keep talking about how they're frauds, and they're going to use unfair data points to point to it. I had one today, Dan Graziano of ESPN. The Vikings have a +2 point differential as an 11-3 team. Used that only point to say that the Vikings were frauds. What a bunch of crap. I wrote a piece and I absolutely buried the living hell out of it, Fred. It was atrocious. It's unfair. It's lazy. And it's trying to confirm your priors without actually investigating the context of why something happened. It's the equivalent of somebody seeing, like, on Christmas Day, oh, the rating was bad. This product sucks. Did you not realize that it aired on Christmas Day? Or like SmackDown, when it goes to FS1 and it does 40% of its normal viewership. Oh, that's normal, buddy, because it changed networks. It went from network television to cable. Like, the context, like Eric Bischoff said it all the time, context is king. And we don't like Bischoff, but he's right. The context matters just as much as the data. Because if I give you a data that says eggs are $5, well, you're going to be like, well, what the hell? Well, I didn't tell you the context was they are at a gas station, a convenience store, and they're not at Walmart where eggs are like $3.50. Like, that kind of context makes a difference. And the analysis about this Vikings team has been so lazy. And so I just want to prove my priors. Kirk Cousins stinks. Like, look, watch this team, understand why they're doing it, understand the why behind it, and then give me some analysis. Problem is, with a lot of national guys, they can't watch everything. You know how hard it is to watch 16 games on a Sunday critically? Like, I have three TVs in my basement. I have a gimmick where I can watch all the games. Even for me, it's difficult. And I've started to train myself to do it because it's my profession. But at the end of the day, if you're going to speak in these platitudes about a team, you better know what the hell you're talking about. And to me, it's very frustrating that the national media really doesn't know. And they just point out to stats or metrics. Hey, why do the stats and metrics say what they do? Are you trying to think critically, or you're just pointing out, DVOA says that they're bad, so they're bad? Why does DVOA say that they're bad? Why are they finding ways to win every single close game that they've been in this year? And to me, that's the most frustrating part. But I could go on and on about my soapbox. Listen to my show, The Real Forno Show, on the Climbing the Pocket YouTube channel or the Daily Nourishment podcast feed. And you can hear me rant about these Vikings 24/7, which my producer is probably going to be pissed at me because I have not sent him the show notes for today. So I'm going to do that while you go through your next little card pack.
All right, we can do that. All right, in this pack, our base cards, a little more star power than the first one, I definitely think so. The Acclaimed as a tag team. Kyle O'Reilly, remember him? Brian Danielson, Jake Hager, and Nyla Rose. And our inserts, we've got a Ray Phoenix Gold Parallel, a Hikaru Shida insert, and a Powerhouse Hobbs insert. And the question in this pack is, are you excited or concerned about the changes coming with Michael Mansory? And to go into that a little bit more so you have more time to send your notes over. From The Observer, the company made a major hire this week with Michael Mansory as the new senior vice president and co-executive producer with Tony Khan going forward. He started on this past week's television. Part of the deal is that Warner Brothers Discovery and Khan had decided to change the look of the show. The planned changes are to go into effect in January at some point. He was for a time considered to be the guy who would replace Kevin Dunn, with the idea that when Vince McMahon left, whenever that would be, Dunn would eventually get replaced by Mansory, but he didn't wait that long. He became executive producer of Pat McAfee's podcast and then was hired as senior VP and executive producer for One, the MMA League, and worked there for 16 months and left that position a few weeks ago. One person in WWE noted to us that Mansory was a, quote, tremendous asset. He was being groomed to be the heir apparent to the Kevin Dunn throne, but moved up too quickly. And much like David Sahadi and several others, that's when Dunn covertly made his life very difficult. That's all a quote from The Observer. So, Michael Mansory coming in and the changes to AEW's presentation. Tyler, are you anticipating this or kind of fearful?
I have no idea. I don't know how much of WWE he was in charge of. Like, you can say he was being groomed as the next guy to Kevin Dunn, but like, let's look at like presidency of the United States. Like, Donald Trump handed it over to Joe Biden, and that doesn't mean Biden's going to do everything that Trump did or vice versa. Like, Trump didn't do everything Barack Obama did. We don't know how much of what Kevin Dunn did. Was his name Michael?
Yes, Michael Mansory.
Mansory, okay. We don't know how much Mansory agrees or disagrees with. We don't know what his vision of what professional wrestling should look like will be. I will say that no matter what, Tony Khan is going to have final say. But I think bringing in outside views, because one of the things that's really tough, and it kind of equates to professional football too, self-scouting. Like, you can self-scout yourself all the time, but sometimes it takes an outside perspective to tell you what you're doing wrong so you can understand it. Because, Fred, if you and I look at this can of Monster, all right, I'm holding up a can of Monster to the microphone. If you and I look at this nonstop every single day for an entire year, we may miss the fact that on the back, calories is spelled wrong because we look at the same thing every single time. Now, it sounds absurd, right? But that's why people bring in other individuals to help look at what you're doing. That's why, as a writer, having an editor is such a big deal, because you can go over your stuff time and time and time again, but you may miss the same mistake when you look at it 30 times because it's your own work. And that's why having somebody come in and critically analyze what you're doing is such a good thing. Will it be good changes? I can't guarantee that. I don't know. But I think it's objectively good to bring in somebody to help enhance your product and at least try new things. And having that outside vision and perspective can be a good thing. We'll see if he ends up being a creative genius or Vince Russo or somewhere in between. We don't know. But it's good that they're trying to help improve the product and not just sourcing from the inside and getting an outside perspective. I think that's a good thing. I think some of WWE's production is good. I also think some of it's really, really bad. What is he going to take? What are his viewpoints on how to present professional wrestling? That is going to be the big question that we have to answer, Fred. And I'm very intrigued to see what happens. But I like that Tony Khan is willing to go outside the box to make it happen.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. It's because it could be very interesting. It could be very interesting in a bad way. I actually have been watching quite a bit of Impact Wrestling recently, trying to get caught up on their best matches. And I think that their announcers there, the former Aiden English and, I'm blanking on the other guy's name. But I think that they have talent. But I also think that they both came up in WWE and they are very... very much stuck in the ways of that. So they'll do stuff like the play-by-play guy will scream tag every time there's a tag in a tag match, or else, you'll hear them go on these diatribes that are extremely WWE stylized. And it's kind of frustrating because you're like, it's Tom Hannifin, Tom Phillips. Because you think these guys could be really good and they're just doing the same old playbook that sounds ridiculous even in WWE, but they're out of it and now it sounds even worse. So I am a little concerned that might happen. Hopefully it won't. I can't imagine it would, but just something, since we don't know what's coming, that's where my mind is going, I guess. Our next pack has base cards of the Bunny, a Jurassic Express tag team card, Ruby Soho, Nick Jackson and Jungle Boy, and there's also a gold parallel of Ricky Starks, a fireworks parallel of Red Velvet that is shiny, and then a Kyle O'Reilly insert. And our question with this pack is, what was your AEW match of the past week? Was it Chris Jericho versus Action Andretti? Was it Ricky Starks versus MJF? Or was it Jon Moxley versus Sammy Guevara on Rampage?
Ricky Starks, MJF, and it was something that we talked about pre-show. I wanted to talk about this match because I think Ricky Starks is a made man. I think how they beat him was brilliant. MJF is a shitbag, and he beat him in a shitbag way. He kicked him in the balls. It does not make Ricky Starks look weak, because if any individual who has been kicked in the balls knows how incredibly that hurts. And I don't think anybody would look down on Ricky Starks for losing in that manner. And everybody's going to look at MJF just being a piece of shit because, well, guess what? He kind of is. That's the whole antithesis of his character. Ricky Starks is going to win that belt soon. When I say soon, I think within the next 3 years.
Okay.
Now, a lot can change in the next 3 years. But let me tell you, I don't think it was a mistake that they elevated him. The Rock comparisons have apparently been around for a long time, and you obviously needed MJF for him to deliver that promo 2 weeks ago, but that promo is still, to me, the best I've ever heard. But you have to have the right foil, and MJF deserves a lot of the credit for that because he set him up perfectly, Starks delivered, and sometimes you need that. Like, Dusty Rhodes' hard times promo doesn't come if he doesn't have the perfect foil either, because you have to have a story. You have to have a setup. Fred, you or I could go in there and cut a really good promo in theory, but if we don't have the right story, the right information, the right foil, it's not going to deliver nearly as well than if we had those things. And I think when you have MJF being able to set up Ricky Starks like that, it gives you hope that he can be the guy. He can deliver in the ring like the guy. He can obviously promo like the guy, and he looks like he can be the guy. I love that they gave him the spot. I think he delivered in a big way. And MJF got his first title defense underneath him, behind him. And now we can look forward to what is likely Bryan Danielson, because he obviously came out at the end when MJF, you know, just continued to be a piece of shit. I did like the other matches that you mentioned. I think Action Andretti, he looked way greener than I expected. There were some kind of like flaws in the match. I think it almost enhanced it because it's Chris Jericho and he can't really compete with the speed of him.
Yeah.
I did like that the finish came out of nowhere, but it didn't feel like it was the wrong decision. It didn't feel like, hey, this shouldn't have happened. It didn't feel like a mistake. It was a flash. And I think everything about it worked. Chris Jericho continues to prove why he is arguably the greatest professional wrestler of all time. And at 53 years old, he continues to deliver. Now, his in-ring career, you can tell it's almost done. Like, he's so smart in the ring, but his body is catching up to him. And age does not wait for any man or woman when it comes to being a physical performer. But the mind of that man and how he wants to give back, and he is trying so hard to make all these guys. We don't appreciate Chris Jericho enough. When he's gone, it's really going to suck because of how much he's meant to this promotion. And he's still a ratings draw.
Yeah.
Like, he's a douchebag heel, and the whole crowd still sings his entrance music. Like,
it's amazing he's still an effective heel. I mean, considering everything, because he's like at the point where Ric Flair was really unable to be a heel or for long periods of time because he was just so beloved.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to miss Jericho a lot when he goes. This run, if you didn't think he was one of the best professional wrestlers of all time before, you can't say no now. You can't. His match with Eddie Kingston back in March at Revolution is going to be a top 10 match of the year for me. They didn't do anything but just beat the piss out of each other.
Yeah.
But the story mattered. The action mattered. And he can still go when you need him to.
I'm a little concerned about him because I do think he's looked noticeably worse compared to how he was earlier in the year in the Claudio match and this Andretti match. It looked like he aged quite a bit in the past couple months. Maybe it was just a, you know, rough night or something, but that's just what my takeaway was. If I were to pick one of the matches, I would actually go with Moxley Guevara. I thought it was worked really well. And I thought it was just the best match between the three in terms of in-ring. Obviously with the least stakes of the three. I liked Andretti Jericho quite a bit, but I do think between what I perceived as Jericho slowing down and Andretti's, being a little off, nothing terrible, but just a little off on some of this stuff. I didn't think it was quite as good as like what the story laid out was. So that's just my take on the question that I definitely did not write. Next pack, we got base cards of Paul White. Tall Paul is back. Sean Spears, Serena Deeb, Ethan Page, and a Mark Henry announcer card. We have a gold parallel of Dante Martin, a insert of Sting, and then a parallel insert of Tall Paul again. So very Paul White heavy pack right there. And the question in this pack is, what comes next with Chris Jericho and Action Andretti? And I have a couple notes from the Observer about this. Basically, Jericho saw Andretti work that AW Dark match with QT Marshall back in October. And he decided after watching that he wanted to do this angle with Action Andretti after he lost the Ring of Honor championship. So Andretti was quietly signed to an AW contract. And he was pulled from everything. He didn't do any more dark matches or anything like that or Dark Elevation. And so after he dropped the belt, they set it for the Garland, Texas Winter is Coming show. And they were very fortunate that they basically got what might have been the best crowd of the year for AEW, because that crowd was super hot for everything. And what's interesting is Dave Meltzer drew parallels, and in a very obvious way made it clear he actually talked with Chris Jericho. He drew parallels between how this angle worked and the 1977 match where Ricky Steamboat, as kind of an up-and-coming guy, upset Ric Flair to win the Mid-Atlantic Championship. So what do you think's coming next with this storyline? Do you think they're going to continue Jericho and Andretti, or are they going to go their separate ways?
I don't know. I have a conspiracy theory. I wonder if he ends up joining Jericho, where it's almost the respecting, hey, you beat me, let me mentor you, and let's take you to that next level as far as in storyline. This could be a one-off, and Chris Jericho is just like so pissed off. This could be the beginning of the end to the JAS. Like, there's so many different directions this could go. I want to think that he's going to figure out a way to continue to continue helping this guy. I just don't know how he's going to do it. I don't know how much time he has left. I don't know if there's a Fozzy tour coming up that could impact things. There's a lot of nuance that you could talk about with this. I'm very intrigued. I genuinely don't know.
Cool. All right. Well, fair enough. All right. Our next pack, we have cards of MJF, Penelope Ford, Tay Conti, Dax Harwood, Jamie Hayter, a gold parallel of Taz, one of the pyro parallels of Stu Grayson, and a Malachi Black debut date insert. And the question in this pack is, should Mandy Rose be brought in?
Why?
I assume that there will be some people suggesting that because she has something of name value since she just left NXT and had been pushed so heavily on NXT TV for like the past year.
Why? No, look. Mandy Rose exists. She's not completely atrocious. She's not going to kill anybody in the ring. But when you take a look at all the little things, like, she was basically fired for doing softcore porn. If she wants to do it, great. Do it. Make a ton of money for being attractive. Hell yeah. I will support anybody who wants to do those kinds of things. If you want to do it, great. But at the end of the day, you're on a national television show and you're advertising yourself online at doing things like softcore porn. The dick ratings that she does with her boyfriend, Tino Sabatelli. That's not going to be endearing to somebody who's trying to sell to advertisers who are going to come at them and say, why is this person on your show? Because they do X, Y, and Z. Should it matter? No. But this is the real world. This isn't like Nirvana. Like, that matters to television show. And you could make an argument if this individual was some kind of humongous draw. Okay. You know what? Maybe we can make an exception because you can go to these advertisers and say, yeah, you know what? They do that. But they also enhance ratings 25% over similar segments during that quarter hour. Then you can at least be like, hey, they make a real impact. Mandy Rose is champion for over a year, and she didn't make any kind of noticeable impact on NXT. There is no evidence of her being a great in-ring talent. There's no evidence of her being a real draw. I think you don't touch her with a 10-foot pole as far as an in-ring product. She's just not going to help your promotion. So I think you just need to stay away. And is that necessarily fair to her? No, but this isn't a business about fairness. It's the real world of business. And I don't think as AEW, you can bring her in.
I agree. And I wouldn't just in general. I don't think she really brings anything especially valuable in terms of professional wrestling. Good honor for making cash, though. It's a hard knock life. All right, pack number 10. We have base cards of Lee Johnson, Justin Roberts, Malachi Black, Pac, and the Butcher and the Blade with a gold parallel of Alex Reynolds, a red parallel serial number to 2 out of 299 of John Moxley, and a Adam Cole Bay Bay insert. He'll be able to return at some point.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages have arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the UV video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
The question is, what are three things AEW needs to improve in the coming year?
Ooh, that's a good one. One, I think they need to find a way to utilize their talent better. You have Miro not doing anything. House of Black is finally just doing kick-ass shit. Like, that's all they should be doing. They should be going in and beating people up.
I think they'll be really helped with the Trios title.
Mm-hmm. You have the Elite who are doing the Trios thing. You have Kenny Omega who's away from the world title picture. I like that. I think you can heat up Omega at any time, but he's got the stuff with Will Ospreay. He has these Trios titles. I think you can do a lot with Omega and not have to worry about him being world champion. I like that. Two, I want to see this promotion start working on just establishing more people at a higher level, utilizing Dynamite. And we talked about it when we talked about Rampage. Look, I swear Tony Khan must listen to the show because some of the things that we talked about a few weeks ago, he's implementing. John Moxley's had been on back-to-back Rampages with bigger matches. They're loading up Rampage like we said they should. And they're establishing people on Dynamite. Action Andretti winning over Chris Jericho was not a mistake. That was on Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you establish people. Continue to do that. Utilize your people and be willing to beat mid-carders. They're a mid-carder for a reason, Fred. Utilize it. It's okay to beat them. It's okay for it to, like, Miro's not going to all of a sudden be destroyed if he goes 8-2 over 10 matches. It's not a big deal. Like, you can still book him strong. And obviously, that's a whole different scenario because we know that he turned down some creative because he was basically going to be given the Ethan Page role, and we know how that turned out. But you keep building stars on Dynamite. And then the third one, I want... What's the best way to put this? I like that they continue to use gimmick matches, but I think they need to slow down on ladder matches. I understand you have your gimmick where you do the title shot with the ladder match at Double or Nothing. Okay, that's fine. Like, you have the one, but I think that they're starting to almost lean into ladder matches as a crutch, and it's not a WWE crutch, but I want to see less ladder matches as Marshall's defensive lineman just picked off UConn and nice. Steamrolled the quarterback for a touchdown in the Myrtle Beach Bowl.
Hell yeah. I'm a Marshall fan. So we've established that a couple weeks ago.
I want to see them use that a little bit less as a crutch. I want to see more creativity and with some of those gimmick matches. Don't ever stop Battle Royals. This is a great Battle Royal company. They know what they're doing. I feel like in this company, we've seen a little too much of the latter, and we're going to get another one with Game 7 of this Trios titles match. I think they could have done a better job with Game 7 than just a ladder match. And I don't know. Maybe I'm off base here, but I just think they've done too much ladders.
I don't disagree, but as someone that was there live for the Young Bucks Lucha Bros ladder match a couple years ago, let them do a ladder match, my God, because it's... It will deliver and it'll be amazing, but I would also get rid of the annual brass ring ladder match. It just feels very WWE-ish. I think you'd benefit from keeping these rare. That's just my take. All right. That was two, actually, I think. You gave me two, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Use talent better and... All right, that's fine. You know what? I'm not going to make you give me three. Who cares?
I did give you three. Use talent better. Keep keep building stars on Dynamite, and then get rid of the ladder matches.
All right, there we go. Good. Fair enough. Number 11 pack has Miro, Adam Cole, QT Marshall, Ortiz, Dustin Rhodes, and Andrade El Idolo parallel, John Moxley, and Nick Jackson inserts. And the question 11 is there any reason to be concerned about TBS not wanting Jericho on Final Battle initially? And there was a report in The Observer that at first Sam Linsky and TBS were against Chris Jericho being on the Final Battle pay-per-view. So there was a plan at a point for Jericho to lose in the four-way at Full Gear to Claudio. But that was reversed when everyone got on the same page about him being okay to be on the pay-per-view.
I get it. Ring of Honor is not their promotion. What happens if he gets hurt on a Ring of Honor pay-per-view and then can't be on Dynamite for a year? What happens if he breaks his neck? What happens if he like snaps his leg in half? Like, this is what they're thinking about. And this is why having a relationship with your television partner is so important. You have to be on the same page with these things. I don't blame them for not wanting him on a different program, even though it's AEW adjacent. And even though ROH talent is on AEW. But if ROH talent's on AEW, I don't think they have an issue with it because you know what? It's AEW programming and it's giving them ratings. Jericho being on an ROH pay-per-view does nothing for AEW, does nothing for Warner Brothers Discovery. So I understand that. Like, I'm glad that they worked it out and it seems to just be a one-off and Jericho's going to be done in Ring of Honor. But I completely, completely understand not wanting him to be on. It does nothing for Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yep, that makes sense. All right, our next pack. And I just realized that there's only 16 packs in here, but this person, it was definitely not me, wrote 24 questions. So we're going to stop with a card gimmick earlier than planned. But Jade Cargill, Young Bucks, Christian Cage, Brian Pillman Jr., and Jim Ross cards. By the way, I saw that Griff Garrison was having some kind of relatively minor surgery last week. Just thought I'd mention that real quick. A Powerhouse Hobbs insert, CM Punk insert, and a Tay Conti insert. Related to Tay Conti, how do you evaluate the 2022 AEW's women's division? Like on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best ever and 1 being the worst ever.
6? I think they're trying with what they have, but they are pushing some of the wrong people, and I don't think they're doing enough for development, and they honestly just don't have a deep roster. And I understand why they introduced the second women's belt. It was too early to introduce a second women's belt because you don't have a roster fortified enough to be able to run that many, because you have essentially multiple storylines with the women, but now you have to have two title pictures. That gets murky when you don't have a super deep roster that's flush with ready talent. Tay Conti is flash potential, but she's not there. Anna Jay's certainly not there. You're not using Diamante, who's one of the better just pure workers in the promotion. Like, there's so many little nuanced things. They weren't ready for a second belt. They're still not ready for a second belt. They need to keep building the division from within. They need to find outside talent, which is why bringing Saraya. I mean, even if Saraya is a capable worker, that's a plus add. Like, because they need capable workers. And will she be there? I don't know yet, but they're at least continuing to try and fortify this division. And I think that's a net positive, but they need to keep doing more. And the addition potentially of Sasha Banks could be massive for the division.
All right. Our next pack has cards of Luchasaurus, Orange Cassidy, Billy Gunn, The Blade, Keith Lee, a gold parallel of Hikaru Shida, a fireworks parallel of Riho, and a Chris Jericho insert. And your question is, how has the return of House of Black gone so far?
Well, that's great. Julia Hart is playing her part perfectly. She just comes in, looks hot. The guys come in, they kick ass. What else do you need? They're being booked really, really well right now, and they need to continue to be booked like this. Because as long as they're booked like this, guess what? That rules. Just let them go kick ass. That's all you need to do. Let them go kick ass.
Yep, basically, they're very good at squash matches in particular, so I think that bringing them back doing those is definitely beneficial.
You have three guys that are work rate guys.
Mm-hmm.
They look like ass kickers. They are ass kickers. And they wrestle really well. What else do you need?
All right. Our next pack has Cash Wheeler, CM Punk, Alex Reynolds, Taz, and Ray Phoenix, a gold parallel of Ruby Soho, a Brian Danielson insert, and a Ray Phoenix parallel insert number to 199. Which, ooh, I think may be the rarest card I've pulled. And your question is, what should main event Wrestle Kingdom? Ospreay versus Omega or Okada versus Jay White?
Well, there's there's two ways to look at this. One, what's the hottest match? And two, what's tradition? Tradition is the title match goes on last. The only time the IWGP title match has gone on last in, like, I'm going to call it modern day Wrestle Kingdom, the Bushiroad era, was when Tetsuya Naito won the G1 and they revolted and they did not want to see it. They want to see Nakamura and Tanahashi. I think having Kazuchika Okada and Jay White finishing Wrestle Kingdom, because you know you're going to get an Okada win. I don't know if Jay White's even signed to any kind of long-term deal. I don't know if he even wants to be in the promotion for very much longer. It sounds like he wants to be more in the States, just kind of what I'm gathering. But the match is ice cold.
Yeah.
Jay White's not even on the Corkins. And yeah, that's weird. You have a mega molten hot match with Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay. Like, I don't see how you don't try to main event with Omega and Ospreay, because it's far and away the hottest match on the card. It's going to steal the show. And imagine having to top that. Like, I think I still do... Okada and Jay White, it's tradition. You get Okada on the mic at the end of the show, because especially if Kenny Omega is winning, having him do the post-match promo could feel really weird, considering he hasn't been in New Japan since the split when he lost the title to Hiroshi Tanahashi at the end of 2019, or the beginning of 2019. I mean, it's been 4 years since he's been in the promotion. That's a long time.
Yeah,
I think you have Okada hold the belt at the end of the night and cut the promo.
Yeah, and I definitely think they're going to do an Antonio Inoki tribute with him doing the chant that Inoki's famous for having done throughout his career. I think that'll definitely be the moment they're going for. But I definitely think Ospreay Omega is a much hotter match. Our next pack has a Andrade El Idolo, a Powerhouse Hobbs, Private Party, Ryo Mizunami unexpectedly, and a Scorpio Sky base card. A Hangman Adam Page insert, a Jurassic Express gold parallel, and a Best Friends Outside the Ring insert. And your question is, what is your prediction regarding what the New Japan USA relationship will be on Ring of Honor's Honor Club?
I think you have some sort of merging of New Japan Strong and Ring of Honor television. You have some crossover. I think it would be objectively good for New Japan to have strong presence on Ring of Honor. I think it would be good for Ring of Honor to have a presence on Strong, because you're going to have crossover. And while Ring of Honor, the cachet name is not what it used to be, it's honestly before Tony Khan bought it, is at its absolute lowest point in the history of Ring of Honor. I think it's going to be able to rebuild some of that cachet. And I think having promotion with New Japan, who honestly needs the promotion in the US more than they have since the beginning of the Bushiroad era, because it's feels cold. Even in our little bubble, it's colder than it's ever been. Like, the no cheering thing has really killed New Japan more than it's killed any other promotion.
Yeah, it's hurt it a lot.
They need something, because when New Japan shows have cheering, everybody loves them. And I feel like the sentiment is people want to be into New Japan, but the no cheering thing is keeping them from being into New Japan. I'll be honest, I don't watch a lot of New Japan right now. And if it had cheering, I bet I'd make more of an effort. But I got out of it really after, I think it was like Wrestle Kingdom 15, like 2021. Like, I couldn't do the no cheering anymore, man. It just got to me. And even AEW, they had some noise at the crowds. Like, they had wrestlers standing on the guardrails. Like, that at least gave something to it. I think they need to figure out a way to help bring back New Japan to the American audience. they can finally bring in gaijin wrestlers to wrestle regularly without having to sit in a hotel room for 14 days. I think that's going to make a big deal. And I think the catalyst of this whole thing could be Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay on Wrestle Kingdom, because I fully got into New Japan when it was Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho. That was like, okay, I've been a casual watcher. Now I really need to get into this. And it did. And I think this could be the next wave, but they'd still need to do more in the States. And I think Ring of Honor is going to be an easy way to do so.
Very good. All right. Next pack has two Grayson, Varsity Blondes, Hikaru Shida, Hook, and Evil Uno base cards, along with the Bunny gold parallel, a Santana and Ortiz pyro parallel, and a Mark Henry insert. And your question is, kind of building off the last one, what was your favorite non-AEW promotion this year?
Oh, that's a good one. I'll be honest, I haven't watched a lot of non-AEW this year, so I'll probably go Ring of Honor, because everything I've watched from Ring of Honor has been very good. I haven't watched a ton of New Japan, but New Japan, it's the no crowd thing. It's killing me. I hate WWE with a burning passion. It would be so great if WWE was good, but it's not. Yeah. It's just not. And unfortunately, that's what most people in this country think professional wrestling is, and that's a damn shame. But with a lot of my sports stuff, I don't have a lot of time to watch wrestling because I surprisingly have other interests in wrestling and football. I'm married, and you know, I have a wonderful puppy. Like there's things keeping me away from it. And AEW has kind of been most of my wrestling this year.
All right. And your last pack has John Silver, Max Caster, Tony Schiavone, Chris Statlander, and Darby Allin base cards, a gold Eddie Kingston parallel, a pack insert, and a Kenny Omega pyro parallel. And your question is, what's next for Ricky Starks? Do you think they're going to have him continue to be part of the MJF title picture? Or do you think they're going to shunt him off to another feud for him to win?
I think they have to shut him off to another feud. Unless they want to build him back up to do another title match, maybe the end of January, to try and, because they have like 18 Dynamites between pay-per-views. That's a long time. So you could build him up for another title challenge. I would almost kind of shift him away from the title picture right now and maybe give him like a few weeks off, bring him back and get him involved with something for the next pay-per-view cycle. You know, it'd be fun. Jungle Boy is doing like, I'm just going to beat all the super heavyweights gimmick. Cause he called out Big Bill. He beat Brian Cage. He beat Luchasaurus. He just wants to face big dudes and beat them. I think that's his arc. I would like to see Jungle Boy and Ricky Starks on Revolution. Just go in there and have a match. Just go in. Nobody really loses anything from it. Just go have a 4.5-star match on a pay-per-view. I think that would be a good direction, but we won't get that.
Yeah. Next question, because we are now out of packs. So Jesse Collins has started a series of posts on Voices of Wrestling about the four pillars and evaluating where they are. And in my opinion, and by which I mean the author, the Factory Trapped author of these questions, their opinion appears to be Sammy Guevara is the weakest of them. So where do you think he stands in the promotion, and what do you think his outlook is going forward?
I think him just being kind of a shitty dude has really crushed his wrestling push, because he had... Now, obviously, it's not 100% on him, but the stuff with Andrade, and then he had the stuff with Kingston. At a certain point, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt anymore. It's the boy who cried wolf. If you cry wolf too many times, when the wolf actually shows up, nobody's going to believe you. So when this stuff keeps happening, like, it's going to be really hard to believe that he's not at fault. And I just think he still has the wrestling talent, but just the way he presents himself, and obviously kind of the guy he sounds like he is backstage, is not helping him at all. I agree with him that Guevara right now is the worst of the four pillars. It kind of stinks, because I thought Guevara had a ton of potential. There's a reason why he was in the first match of AEW history. If you don't count All In, it was him and Kip Sabian. The first match of Dynamite was him and Cody Rhodes. Like, those aren't mistakes. they have a lot of faith in what this guy can be, but I don't know if he's ever going to get there because he is kind of shooting himself in the foot.
Yeah, I looking at my numbers, I have him like near the top 20 just in terms of match quality, but it feels like a lost year for him. I mean, I've had him with like four and a half star matches, and it just feels like he's just hasn't been around at all, really, in any kind of key position. And that's wild to think about when he's had this match output that I've really liked. But I do feel like he's slipping down the standings, and you know, I don't know if it's just like this is going to be it for him, or if they are waiting for an opportunity to feature him moving forward. But I don't know. I think his career is going to be very interesting and possibly not in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Next question is, what would you do with Dustin Rhodes over his final year?
That's a good question. I think you kind of give him a couple tribute spots, give him an opportunity to work with some young wrestlers. I really like the idea of him doing like a reverse of the New Japan Young Lions 7-match series, where he just wrestles 7 matches with young guys and gives, like, he can still put on a good 4-star match, and he doesn't look labored in doing so. I like the idea of just getting him to work with younger wrestlers.
I think that'd be a cool idea.
Yeah, just do like the 7-match farewell series or something, and just have him work with young guys. I think that could be really fun. He has a lot to offer as far as how to be a professional in the ring, how to work a ring, how to work a crowd. He gets it.
He's still a really good babyface.
Yeah,
very effective.
And you know what? He's not the best in-ring worker, but he's a seasoned pro, and he's not going to make mistakes. And I think a lot of young wrestlers could really benefit from working with him. That's how I would approach it. And you know what? You give him the reverence that he deserves. He seems to want to work with young guys. He's involved in the Nightmare Factory a lot. Utilize that and treat him with the respect he deserves on the way out.
One other idea I had was that you could pair him with a couple, like maybe Top Flight or someone, and have him chase the Trios belt and possibly win it around June, around the midpoint of the year, just as a little, not even so much a goal, you know, a retirement watch kind of reign, but a let's help establish these two guys as, you know, upcoming stars kind of run. And you could easily replace Top Flight with whatever duo you would like that's on the younger side, but just an idea. Our next question is, what if someone from WWE's roster were to jump to AEW effective immediately, which person do you think would be the most successful at making that jump?
Ricochet. Yeah. I think he works with the style really well. I think he's being massively underutilized in WWE, and he already has some chemistry with some of the workers there. I think it just makes the most sense. I don't think he's indoctrinated so much on the WWE style where they would, because he knows how to do spot fest. He worked with so many of these guys on the indies. He gets it. I think you put him in there and he fits like a glove. And I think you could rebuild the cachet that WWE has honestly stripped from him over the course of the last however many years. I think if you bring in a guy like Roman, you're going to get an initial bump because he is one of the biggest stars in WWE. But I don't know what kind of transition it would be for him to start working this style. It would be a big one. Yeah. Because they're so inherently different.
Especially now.
Yeah.
I actually think he was a very good worker a couple years ago. Especially earlier in the Shield run where he could be kind of I think he excelled as like the tag team partner of Rollins, where he would come in and do the hot tag and do his, you know, his cool spots and look really cool. Mm-hmm. And I think he's still capable of doing good matches, but he has not been doing that this year really in general. Because that's not his gimmick, and that's fair, but, you know, it makes me enjoy him less when I'm not so into the gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to pick someone, I'd actually probably go with Seth Rollins. I think he's still a really good worker. I think he is, you know, has a big name value, and I think he could transition to the ring style pretty easily. A lot of his matches were pretty close to AEW style, I think, this year. It's kind of a faster pace, and he's able to do that in WWE, and I think he'd make the segue well. Plus, to get him out of this terrible, whatever the hell this gimmick is that he's been doing this year, the freaking, you know, with the ridiculous outfits and the laughing and everything.
Yeah, Seth Rollins. I don't, I don't know if he'd be any good here, because I think he might just be one of those people that's just too indoctrinated on WWE style to be good outside of the system. But I would like to be proven wrong, because I think he could be an asset to anybody who picked him up if he wasn't fully indoctrinated on the style.
Yeah. Okay, question number 21. Who would you give the MVP award to for the women's division? I feel like you probably tipped your hand on this with the MVP vote, but...
Tony Storm.
Oh, really? Over Britt Baker?
I like, as far as like overall, I think Britt Baker's done a little more, but if you just talk the women's division, how she had to rehab that title and how she held it and defended it for that time period, I don't see how you can give it to anybody else. And, you know, I probably should have thought of Tony Storm when we talked about this at the beginning of the show, but that run with the title was so tremendous. I think it usurps anything else that the division has done.
I think that's really fair. I would have gone with Tony Storm as well. Question 22. Who was the most underutilized member of the AEW roster in 2022?
Underutilized. Oh, that's a good question. You know, I'm gonna kind of go an odd one. Buddy Murphy.
Okay.
How do you not get Buddy Murphy and just send him out there for a bunch of singles matches and just have him put on four-star 12-minute matches every single week? What are we doing? You have a guy who delivers constantly, and he can just sit on television and wrestle. He doesn't need to be involved in storyline. Obviously, he's a member of House of Black now, but just have him go out there and have bangers. Like, why aren't we doing that? What, yeah. Like, why? You could argue Miro, because Miro's character is so great.
Would have been my pick.
Yeah, and just think, like, how much we missed out on with Red Dragon before Bobby Fish left the promotion.
Yeah.
You could have done another Bucks match. You could have had them wrestle so many tag teams. So you had two Red Dragon matches.
Two straight tag matches with them, yeah.
Super disappointing. And I think that we could do so much better. And Buddy Murphy just going out there and wrestling. Just go wrestle, bud. That's all you need to do. Just go wrestle. I think they need more of that. We talked about that. I mean, them needing more of it on pay-per-views a few years ago. Oh, and you know what? They've had just more good wrestling matches in the middle of those pay-per-views of the last year. It's been great. Now get those on Dynamite. Put Buddy Murphy in the sixth quarter hour and just have him go wrestle for 12 minutes. There you go.
All right. Yeah, I think that would have been really good. Another strong option that might supplant Miro for me is Ricky Starks. I think he could have done a lot more this year. And,
I wonder if they were trying to keep him on ice a little bit to make sure his neck was okay.
I assume so. That is a definite possibility. But what was the worst moment of the year for AEW outside of Brawl Out? Because that's kind of the layup option there, I think. Ooh.
My brain doesn't necessarily remember all the bad moments. Soraya's introduction to the company after Grand Slam, that promo was absolutely abysmal.
That was bad, yeah.
But I want to know who's at fault. Did anybody talk to her about how, hey, make sure you're not doing a WWE-style promo. Make sure you're just talking like candidly from the heart. Like, you don't want to do this, that, or the other thing. You want to make it sound real, because this is real. We're not doing a fully scripted product. You have a basic storyline you need to follow and just do that. And I think either nobody had that conversation with her or it didn't sink in. And that was a really bad one. I'm trying to think of other really bad moments. Like, they're all just slipping my head. That's the only one I can recall.
Let's see. I would point to Thunder Rosa, the drama with her. As a potential option here. I think that the early days, you liked it a lot more than me, but I think the early days of the firm was kind of rough. What happened with all the injuries and drama with regards to storylines, you know, It's kind of a generic answer, but I also think it hurt the company quite a bit. Let's see what happened to Rampage for a while there. It was rough. Some of the worst of like Jade Cargill, just in terms of her. I thought she got really stagnant this year, and that's not good. But
yeah. Odie's waking up. He's a happy boy sitting next to me right now.
Dog time. All right, last one. What will be your favorite memories of this year of AEW? That was the dog, I assume, and not your stomach.
That was the dog. I have not eaten yet, so it could have been my stomach, but it wasn't.
There you go.
I think my favorite memories will have been the going to All Out with everybody. From the network, and after that ladder match, working ourselves into a shoot as to who the masked guy was, that was a lot of fun. But I think my ultimate favorite memory was Eddie Kingston winning the big one. He finally won a match that meant something. He beat Chris Jericho fairly in the middle of the ring, and to kind of see that mini arc completed. And now Kingston, I think, should have been utilized more, but there were some mitigating circumstances, the Sammy Guevara stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that's the one thing that will stand out. Okada debuting on Dynamite was tremendous. Look, Wisconsin isn't necessarily known as a wrestling area, but that crowd popped for Okada. As they should have.
Yes.
And I think the other one that'll stand out to me is the Elite versus Aussie Open. And sorry, the Elite versus Empire. Like
United Empire.
United Empire. Yeah, I'm losing my mind here. But that was a tremendous match that's somehow going to miss my match of the year. Actually, maybe it isn't. I don't remember. I'll have to pull it up. Nope, that's currently number six on my match of the year list.
Awesome. I really liked the return of the Elite. Getting them back was nice. Bryan Danielson coming in and having that string of really great matches early on in the year was awesome. Anything Eddie Kingston did, and the rise of Ricky Starks over the past month or two, I think those are probably the highlights I'm walking away with. I'm really excited about what next year will bode for AEW and how that goes. But yeah, that's it for our questions. As far as what's coming up next, we have a pretty full card so far announced for this coming Dynamite on the 21st for the Holiday Bash Show. We get game or match 5 of the Death Triangle Elite Series with a no DQ stip. We get FTR versus the Guns and Hikaru Shida challenging Jamie Hayter for the AEW Women's World Championship. Bryan Danielson will be cutting a promo. We'll also get Ricky Starks appearing in some format and a face-to-face between Swerve and Keith Lee. And then on the 28th, we already have announced Samoa Joe versus Wardlow for the AEW TNT Championship. But that's what we have announced so far from AEW. And that concludes our show. And for me, I think it concludes my role on the podcast for the year. I'm going to be traveling next weekend and probably be unable to pop on for the show. So I think Tyler's got a great guest lined up to fill my seat. And hopefully I'll be back for the show after that. But if not, similar circumstances, I think Tyler will be able to get someone. And yeah, I've had a lot of fun doing this podcast this year, and I'm looking forward to doing it next year. I'm glad Tyler asked me to do it. But I've been having a lot of fun working with him, so.
Yeah, that's the first time I've ever heard that. I like the sound of that, Fred. No, it's been a really good time, and we're excited to continue this podcast into 2023. And I'll give a little hint for who my special guest will be next week. The creator of the Dynamite Dozen, and he will be here as we unveil our running Dynamite Dozens for the year, which has started in the beginning of October. We are going to continue that and update it as each month passes, and then we will bring suit on to unveil our full Dynamite Dozens and discuss his article with him. I just gave it away. Yeah, Suit Williams, that guy kicks ass.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, so he's going to be a hopefully a semi-regular contributor, because his article series that he's done the past 3 years, the Dynamite Dozen, has been tremendous, and it gives a real nice encapsulation of the year. Until then, if you celebrate Christmas, have a Merry Christmas. If you celebrate Hanukkah, I hope you are currently enjoying and have a wonderful time celebrating. If you don't celebrate either of those or celebrate anything in between, I hope you have a very happy holiday season. And if you celebrate nothing, I hope your day goes wonderfully. You can follow us as a podcast at Good Bad Hungy on Twitter. You can email us at hungypod@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at TheRealForno. You can follow Fred on Twitter at FlagrantWrestling. If you have any questions for the show, please shoot us a DM or an email. And if you don't want to do either of those, you can do that on the Good Bad Hungy channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Have yourself a wonderful holiday season, and Fred will see you next year, but I will see you next week.
Y'all have a good one. Happy holidays, everyone. Enjoy the end of the year, and happy wrestling, everyone.
Skull Vikings.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.